to order. I would like the board member Noran to lead the Pledge of Allegiance. I'd like to introduce board members. To my far right is Greg Gusty from Ukiah. And to my immediate right is Bill Massey from Forestville. I'm John Corbett from McKinneyville. To my immediate left is David Norn from Sebastopol. And to my far left is Valerie Minton, board member from Petaluma. And then board member Hales is not present here, and I haven't heard whether he's just late or will be attending later or not.
No, Mr. Hales will not be at today's meeting.
Okay, so Mr. Hales will not be in session. Now is the time for board member ex parte communications.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Since our last meeting, I have met with local officials regarding West County sewer issues and TMDL.
Any other board members?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I've also met with folks about West County sewer, and I've also had conversations about Sonoma Compost at the Central Landfill.
I have been in various meetings. They've always been noted as personal comments, subject to public hearing, and generally are rephrasing the things already stated in the record on marijuana issues with literally hundreds of people. So those conversations have been going on. That will eventually come back and be on our agenda. I made no commitment as to the final text. With that, I think we're done with ex parte. The next will be our state board report, our esteemed state board member. And I realize you're in the job these days of allocating pain between water users, so hopefully we'll be a slightly friendlier audience.
Hello. Good morning. Shared sacrifice. My name is Stephen Moore. I'm a board member on the State Water Resources Control Board and liaison to the Great North Coast region. And I thank you all for this opportunity to update you on activities of the State Water Board. And thank you, of course, for all the activities going on here. I look forward to today's hearing. As always, I'll structure my update based on first budget, and second recent activities, third upcoming activities, and then, let's see, testing. Is this the wrong, should I use this mic? Okay, we'll get a little closer. Upcoming activities and then legislation. Today I'm going to combine budget and legislation update because it's that time of year where the active legislation is actually related to the upcoming state budget. And there's a very active process right now on trailer bill language that would go with the budget. And so it's kind of a combination budget legislation effort that I'll touch on. There's a lot going on. It's interesting with, since the last time I've updated you, we talked a bit about the urban water conservation regulations that we had recently updated on March 17th. Then after that time, because I updated you all around March 10th, March 11th time frame. Well, after that, the governor issued an executive order with great fanfare showing that there's basically zero snowpack in the Sierra. And had us turn around in a month's time a second update to the emergency urban water conservation measures. So the pace of activity recently at the State Water Board has been pretty staggering and it's really, I mean, at the board member level, we're doing what we can to keep up, but we really commend our staff for working around the clock, weekends, evenings, as well as regional board staff have helped us on a lot of activity in the last couple of months. So I'll touch on that a little bit. As far as recent activities, besides urban water conservation measures, which have been in the press and widely reported on, we amended the ocean plan on April 7th to have a statewide policy and regulatory approach to address trash in surface waters. But we also amended the inland surface waters plan. And we created a statewide water quality objective for trash. And so now it's consistent statewide. And as part of it finds its home in our implementation, mostly in our urban runoff pollution control programs. And so that hasn't been completely approved through the whole process of EPA approval and all that, but it's well underway. And that was a landmark amendment of statewide significance. Similarly, we a month later, on May 6th, we amended the ocean plan with a groundbreaking policy on ocean desalination facilities. That may not feel like an imminent proposal in this region, but it's pretty important for the state in terms of the overall water balance and a practical safety net for our coastal communities. That's the way we view it. It's not going to solve the state's water problems in and of itself, but it's part of a portfolio that in extended drought periods, it can keep cities from becoming non-viable. And that was a term that I was made familiar with during our interactions with representatives from Australia who went through their 10 to 12-year millennial drought. And they had cities of 1 million people that were on the verge of becoming non-viable, is how they would say it. And I said, "Not what was that word? Oh, non-viable." Okay, you know, it's and they look at, you know, in our interactions with them, they look at our current system of managing water information, and they say something along the lines of "Crikey," because in Australia. That was one of the ways they got through their epic drought was to focus on information collection so that there was less emotion involved in the water discussions and more facts and information. And so that's a theme that I'll circle back to. I'm going to bounce around to some of the recent activities. In our Division of Financial Assistance, we've been very busy. It relates partially to the Proposition 1 efforts to develop guidelines for distribution of hundreds of millions of dollars that the voters approved last November. And so we've developed drinking water, state revolving fund guidelines that were updated. We have drafts, and we have meetings around the state to discuss the guidelines for the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund Proposition 1 funding. You know, backing up, really, I want to remind everyone who's interested that our Division of Financial Assistance has developed a system where any public entity that's interested in financing any public project, the whole range, need only submit one single application for the whole range of grants and loans, you know, going back to Prop 13, Prop 50, Prop 84, Prop 40, you know, Prop 1, and our SRF program. And so we're trying our best to make it simple for communities to access these funds statewide. There's drought response funding with water recycling. And as of June 1st, There's nearly $300 million in loan agreements that are secured under the 1% financing. We made $800 million available to be taken advantage of by the end of this year. At this point, we have 35 partial applications totaling $1.7 billion. So we're working through with these applicants to help them submit complete applications before the deadline at the end of this year. So as you can tell, we're the $800 million is being exceeded, but fear not. You know, with the water recycling component, that's on the order of $625 million in the Prop 1, we're going to continue to prime the pump, keep the engine going in terms of this program and grow it. So $800 million won't be the limit. You know, related to water recycling and the discussions that you all have had in detail here, I think it's worth noting that our expert panel that we've convened on indirect potable reuse with surface water augmentation and feasibility for direct potable reuse, our Division of Drinking Water staff convened this panel. It was a couple months ago in March to advise on public health issues, scientific, technical matters regarding development criteria for surface water augmentation. So this is the next one's queued up. We have adopted regulations for recycled wastewater to be percolated into the ground for indirect potable reuse, the groundwater recharge regulations. But the next phase are the surface water augmentation regulations for recycled water. And the panel intends to provide the final comments this month on these draft criteria. And they also are reviewing a presentation on the national framework for direct potable reuse. And that's where you go from the wastewater treatment plant into a drinking water treatment plant and then into the drinking water distribution system. That's not something we do yet, but it's queued up. But we feel at the State Water Board is critical, and this would be for our Division of Drinking Water as well as our water quality folks, that we do this with the highest level of scientific review. So we've engaged those who are expert in issues such as endocrine disruption and the latest research on contaminants of emerging concern, and we'll continue to be vigilant on those topics as we move forward to develop the significant drought-proof water supply. I like to remind folks that we're recycling about 13% to 14% of our wastewater in California, and Israel recycles 90%. So we won't be alone in pursuing more water recycling. And there are exciting, just numerous projects underway that in areas that you read about that are highly stressed in terms of their water supply this year and the compounded years of the drought south of the Delta, there are innovative, exciting programs underway to use this recycled wastewater for growing food, you know, for actually doing agriculture and keeping the economy going down there using highly treated wastewater. So it's cleaner than source water that we use for drinking water. So these continue to be initiatives that we're working hard on. You know, a big part of this whole drought response is how can we get the funding set up? And there have been, you've read about the legislative actions to make more funding available, in essence taking some of the proposition money the voters have approved and increasing the burn rate, if you will, to really distribute these funds to assist communities with drought. There's a group you may not have heard of, but we're part of it. It's called the California Financing Coordinating Committee, and we have funding fairs around the state. We had one in May in Tulare. There was one in Eureka on June 3rd, and this is a committee of six member agencies, which are four state agencies and two federal agencies, conducting funding fairs to educate interested parties about this committee and the financial and technical resources available for infrastructure projects. And information on these funding fairs is available at the webpage at It's cfcc.ca.gov. So CFCC, California Financing Coordinating Committee. So cfcc.ca.gov. But this continues to be equal all hands on deck efforts of our agency, recognizing that this paradigm shift that we've spoken of, we're moving out of who's the most competitive project to where's the need, because of the issue of downward spiral. If wastewater infrastructure and safe drinking water are not available, and the technical, managerial, and financial capacity of local agencies is just not there to meet water quality requirements or safe drinking water requirements or financing needs. And so we recognize that, and our staff takes a proactive approach to try to make funds available, whether through grants, loans, or principal forgiveness of loans. And that's statewide. We don't have any bias to North Coast, Los Angeles, Colorado River, Tahoe. It's completely need-based. One of the exciting programs in financing that relates to urban runoff quality, but also education. It's a program we developed last year called Drought Response Outreach Program for Schools. I don't know if you've heard about this, but the acronym is DROPS. We approved our funding list for 30 local educational agencies receiving over $30 million in unallocated Prop 1340 and Prop 50 funds to implement low-impact development strategies designed to maintain the pre-development hydrology on school campuses. And so in this region, the Northern Humboldt Union High School District was awarded almost $1 million. And to try to transform school campuses into green infrastructure, meeting dual purposes of using available public lands to enhance watershed function for water quality and water supply reliability, flood control, and other multi-benefits, but also educate the next generation of planners and engineers about what works as we transform our urban landscapes and how water moves across them. So we're very excited about that. The SB 445 site cleanup sub-account program is the SCAP. This was a law passed last year, and you might remember how enthusiastic I was about this. the mill tax attached to the gasoline use that enables us to really address in this program those sites that have gone as orphan sites or, no responsible parties. And so we're moving forward with that program because we have this new source of funding. Now, it's unique because it allows funding agreements with applicants who are not typically eligible, such as private companies and individuals. And it also requires the State Water Board to consider whether there are alternative sources for funding for projects so the SCAP can focus on projects where no other funding options may be available. So this is this new tool in the regional board's toolbox to really get out there and get funding attached to sites that may have been kind of floundering for years because of the lack of available funding to get cleanup going for groundwater protection. Let's just check a couple things here. I want to acknowledge, and you've probably received updates, and Mr. St. John might even have given you these updates at the last board meeting, but our staff continues to be engaged in the updates related to the Klamath hydroelectric project and the whole FERC relicensing. And the water quality certification that our State Water Board water rights staff would issue. So in April, we met with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality to discuss Oregon and California's water quality certification processes. And we're meeting with PacifiCorps staff to discuss our existing memorandum of understanding for the preparation of the environmental documents for the Klamath hydroelectric project. So that continues to move forward, however painfully slow it may feel to some at times. And so we continue to be involved and work with your staff, notably Clayton Krieger, on the KTAP and the K-bump processes. And I won't define all those. But you know what I'm talking about. Emergency drinking water funding is a big deal for us, you know, and there's actually even some areas in this region that are having water issues, even though it's interesting because the drought monitor maps, I'm sure you all have noticed this, that there's a different shape this year compared to 2014. There's less drought stress as you go from Marin County on up the coast, and yet it's still a drought, but because there was also the momentum of the lack of rainfall of the last few years that still create drought conditions, and I'll talk about a specific case. The emergency drinking water funding program has approved over $3.5 million under the SB 103 $4 million set aside that occurred this year. And one of the sites here in this region is a water treatment system improvements for the Leggett Valley Unified School District in Mendocino County, about $234,000. And I think I mentioned we've, as part of the 17 projects for interim emergency drinking water from last year, that was bottled water for the Yurok Tribe and a vending machine for the Yurok Tribe. I think I've mentioned that before, but that continues to be put into use. An issue of great interest here is the Sonoma County Water Agency urgency change of their water rights. There was we did issue a temporary urgency change order that on May 1st, I believe. And but there were circumstances that changed in terms of the availability of water through the Potter Valley project that goes from Lake Pillsbury under the mountain to Lake Mendocino. And so on May 27th, the Sonoma County Water Agency requested additional reductions to minimum flows on the upper Russian River to prevent significant depletions of storage in Lake Mendocino and potential elimination of water supplies for 2015. And also asked for additional reductions to the minimum flows on the lower Russian River to protect fishery resources in Dry Creek. And yesterday, our deputy director signed an order that allows the reduced minimum in-stream flow requirements of 25 CFS on the upper Russian River and 50 CFS on the lower Russian River. The terms and conditions of the May 1st order remain the same, with the exception of term one as it relates to these minimum flow requirements. So that decision was made yesterday, June 17th. I know that there were four protests to that, and we took them very seriously. They were mostly related to the concerns about water quality, and so our staff will remain working closely with Sonoma County Water Agency to track those issues. And that's a theme that we're seeing a lot in the Central Valley as well, you know, in terms of there's certain water quality objectives or flow requirements or water right license requirements, bypass flows, all these things that in this hydrology of a fourth consecutive year of drought, it takes us outside of the boundaries of the evidence, in my opinion, that was presented during those hearings in terms of setting those requirements. And you know, we're grappling with that as we're dealt these blows by Mother Nature, but also, you know, we'll recognize that human management of the system comes into play as well. And so we're I would say, adaptively managing, but as our chair, Felicia Marcus, says repeatedly, we're faced with a series of terrible choices when we have to look at these situations. So we work really closely with affected water rights holders, representatives, and the fishery agencies to try to actively manage these situations and not create irreversible impacts that are avoidable. in terms of curtailed water rights, in this region, there are none except Scott River. And the water rights affected are all decreed surplus class rights and post-1914 rights. These curtailments in the Scott River watershed were initiated on April 23rd. So, in the area of recent activities, in addition to those that I've discussed, to give you a flavor for some of the financing issues and those actions from the last couple months, in the last 2 days, we really took on some significant issues. And it was 17 hours of hearing in 2 days. So forgive me if I seem a little slow. And that was the day before yesterday and yesterday. The three items that were queued up that took the most time, there were some other items too. There was first the petition that we received by 37 parties on the Los Angeles Regional Board's MS4 MPDS permit, which is the urban runoff pollution control permit. Phase one, which is for populations over 100,000 people. And so why would you care? Well, actually, the decisions that were rendered in this petition on Tuesday are precedential and will be a guiding light for all regional boards, as specifically in the 88-page petition document, there is direction that we offer to the regional boards to consider as a result of this lengthy process that we initiated in 2012, not long after I was appointed. And what is the punchline here? Basically, we in the late 90s, we established that water quality standards do matter with urban runoff pollution. And that was a precedential order. And we said that the regional boards and state board will establish receiving water limits for urban runoff discharges that are linked to attainment of water quality standards. Okay, that's discretionary. Not all states do this. Our state board reaffirmed this policy direction and discretion. But what we did was we established an alternative pathway to compliance with receiving water limits if they can't be met immediately. And as you know, the physical layout of our urban drainage systems has a huge effect on our ability to meet water quality standards. The issue of directly connected impervious surfaces doesn't allow enough time during the transport of pollutants to be removed through natural processes prior to be delivered to our waterways quickly. And so in many instances, bacteria, metals, oils and grease, you know, all sorts of pollutants, oxygen demand, can't necessarily be met in waterways in urban areas. So there's a compliance conundrum. And what we, through much dialogue and collaboration and debate, we arrived at a construct, an architecture, whereby receiving water limits are complied with if local entities undertake a watershed-based approach to meeting water quality standards that is infrastructure-based. And it involves the implementation of green infrastructure, but also stormwater treatment, and developing a watershed management plan that is designed to meet water quality standards. If you're in that planning process, you are deemed in compliance with the receiving water limits, with a lot of checks and balances involved. And so that will now find its way in our state water board permits. It already had a version of it in the San Diego permit. They're going to modify it. The San Francisco Bay permit is imminent. It includes provisions that are similar. The Santa Ana Regional Board's permit is imminent. It contains provisions that are similar. And your staff have been involved in these discussions as well, Mona Doherty and others. And so I find it very exciting. I think this is the tool that we can use to, in a practical manner reinvent the stormwater drainage infrastructure in our cities, which will have multiple benefits, not just to prevent pollution, but to augment water supply reliability, particularly during drought periods. So that was a long haul. And then we had a workshop after that on the composting operations in our state. And we have a draft order, a general order, that we worked with each of the 9 regional boards, including yours, to develop a general order that can be used by staff to create an efficient but protective program for regulation of discharge from compost facilities. They basically can't, although we really support the state's goals of increasing composting and diverting organic waste from landfills. Right now, the goal is 75% diversion. Well, that means we do need more facilities. And so from a water quality standpoint, we're interested in just making sure that we have the right amount of touch, the light touch, but enough as these facilities are developed to make sure that they're protective of water quality. And as Vice Chair Franz Spivey Weber said, we don't want to kill the golden goose, because if this is done quickly and irresponsibly, we could create water problems as we try to solve solid waste problems. So we had several hours of testimony on how great compost is. I think it can be, as Chair Marcus said, you know, it probably could be used for an anti-aging cream. It's so great. And we know that, you know, it enhances soil health and retains water, gives us water supply reliability, as well as, you know, so many other benefits. And so we heard all about that. But we heard that there was some significant concerns about the costs of compliance. And so we're going back to refine the program. But we really appreciated the regional board's support in the development of this, and your support actually in the draft order to date. And so we're working with a team of regional board folks to work through that. And hopefully August 4th we'll have a draft order for consideration. And then yesterday was a difficult hearing on a proposed emergency regulation, which we did adopt. Emergency regulation for enhanced conservation measures and information in the key Russian River tributaries of Dutch Bill Creek, Green Valley Creek, Mark West Creek, and Mill Creek, which is up by Healdsburg, and a tributary of Dry Creek. This is a situation, so it'll be, you know, the first regulation dealing with the Russian River in this phase of the drought. It's not a curtailment, though. We were approached by Fish and Wildlife and National Marine Fisheries Service to consider curtailments similar to what we have done to protect fishery flows in Mill Creek, Antelope Creek, and Deer Creek that are tributary to the Sacramento River. But these tributaries in the Russian River really have a significantly different set of circumstances. They're not a system that has a base flow. In many cases, the concern is making sure there's a minimum trickle of flow that connects pools to maintain water quality for the specific species here of concern, which are the endangered coho salmon and the steelhead, which the legal status, I don't think it's endangered, but it's a sensitive species. Taking a step back to give the big picture perspective on this, there, based on the testimony we received, my impression is that this is had been a successful broodstock program that has taken significant investment to take a species, the coho salmon, from the brink of extinction, and it may be the most imperiled species in the United States. In terms of its being right on the brink of existence. And there were only 2 to 7 individuals at the late 90s, I think, in a couple of years. So there's been a successful investment. $10 million of public money has gone into bringing back this population in a successful landmark novel program that Sonoma County Water Agency, Corps of Engineers, and many others have been contributing to. Well, this year's hydrology in these four watersheds is alarming because the connectivity that's needed to maintain water quality and this population that is on the edge that we're bringing back is in danger of being undermined. And I look at it as this significant investment of interested people here locally, as well as having statewide, nationwide significance that has to be protected. But we need to approach this with all respect and deference to the local community, and really what we all State Water Board members recognize as a legitimate dedication and commitment to being stewards of this fragile resource. And so in coming, our proposed action can be to require enhanced conservation measures in these watersheds and to require submittal of information on water use could be viewed as fairly heavy-handed. But we hope to generate through this is kind of coming back to a theme I introduced earlier, which is the generation of information is one of the greatest ways to solve conflict, because it actually brings the facts to the table. And that's where, I have certainly, and many do, have faith in the people to make the right decisions based on having the right set of true facts. So that's really our humble approach in all this, is to first collect information. And then when people see, where the diversions are occurring, what the quantities are, we can come up with a system in the long run that will never bring us to this brink again. Because if you look back to 1977 and the 90s drought, we weren't ever this low in flow in these streams. And so there's an urgency, an emergency to save the species for this year, because last year we had some issues in terms of the juvenile recruitment. And so one thing is there's not an imminent order for information at this point. To be clear, what the regulations set up on the information collection side is it gives the authority to our deputy director to issue an information order. So our proposal is to initiate a public process to the best of our ability prior to issuing an information order. Okay, so with the regulations, we're not imminently demanding the information. And so there's a stepwise process that we want to, in good faith, engage with the community to the best of our ability here locally. So the week of July 6th, we have four meetings scheduled, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And this is information we try to make as easy to find as possible. So it's on the homepage of our website. If not now, certainly very soon, where it'll say Emergency Russian River Regulations. There'll be a link right there, and you'll click on it. And you'll be able to get this document I have here, which is just a simple table of the four meetings that are planned. The Monday, July 6th from 6 to 9 p.m. will be at the Salmon Creek School in Occidental, 1935 Bohemian Highway. On Tuesday, July 7th from 6 to 9 p.m., it will be a meeting in Healdsburg City Council Chambers on 401 Grove Street in Healdsburg. On Wednesday, July 8th, also from 6 to 9 p.m., there's a meeting in Forestville at the Forestville Fire Department at 6554 Maribel Road. And then finally, there's two meetings scheduled on Thursday, July 9th, one during the day, and they're both here at this location at the North Coast Regional Water Board. The first is from 1 to 4 p.m., and the second meeting will be from 6 to 9 p.m.
And I'll just mention that information on this emergency regulations and these meetings are also linked from our homepage.
Thank you very much. for noting that. And so, you know, to the best of our state agency's abilities, we're trying to get out there, hear concerns, hear questions, because there are ways. It doesn't mean everybody has to put a meter in. You know, that's the gut reaction. I would have that reaction as a resident. There are ways we can come up with estimates of water use that will get us more to the facts. And we actually, it's interesting, I'll quickly note it on the budget trailer bill stuff. There actually is proposed trailer budget language that lists ways people can measure water diversion. It's quite fascinating that it was just installed like a couple days ago as a proposed amendment to the trailer bill language. So we're really trying to go about this in a way that fits the situation the best we can. I mentioned the urban water conservation regulations. You know, what's interesting is the reach of those regulations, there are statewide requirements. So if you're a citizen of California, there's certain things that you're required to do. You're not supposed to wash driveways and sidewalks with potable water, for instance. Right? You're not supposed to have runoff from your irrigation system that goes over impervious surfaces off your site. Those type of things. You're supposed to have a shutoff valve on your hose. Those apply to everybody. They apply to the folks in these watersheds. But what's interesting is that the percent reductions that you've heard about and read about that are tailored to specific areas based on their per capita use and trying to meet the governor's executive order mandate of 25% reduction, those are all implemented through the water purveyors of the state. And so there are places, there's sort of, you can think of them as gaps, where the percent reduction of water use is not compulsory as it is in much of the state. One of those examples is when you divert water from a stream, or if you divert water from a well that might be connected to a stream. And so what this regulation does is it fills that gap in these watersheds for the purpose of protecting the endangered species. There's an enhancement here because that regulation that's statewide is for potable use. And in these watersheds, it's for both non-potable and potable use. So that your diversions from the stream, you're not going to be allowed to use that to water lawns or any kind of non-essential landscaping. Trees, yes, right? That's been the message all along, that keep trees alive, let the non-essential ornamental landscape go this year to preserve water in case this drought continues. The message is every drop we save is a drop we can use later on in this drought, or even if we get an average type rainfall season next year, we're still going to be in drought. Our deficit is we're 2 or 3 years behind the eight ball. What if the El Nino comes? Well, last year, remember about this time, there was talk about an El Nino? Remember that? It didn't come. It was an El No-Sho. And then where does that get us? You know, as Chair Felicia Marcus says, hope is not a water management strategy. And neither are the dancing things. And I've showed my father my rain dance. He says, don't do that. You're embarrassing me. So with those ideas in mind, we really are trying to focus these urban conservation regulations on those things that are not essential for health and safety, and letting outdoor landscaping go that isn't functional. We're not saying no green play fields. We're just saying, and actually the governor in the executive order said it's illegal to use a sprinkler on a street median. Yeah. So just so anybody here from Public Works knows, and you know, for ornamental turf. So let that stuff go golden. You know, people say we're going to have a brown lawn. It's a badge of honor and all that stuff. Just let your lawn go golden. It'll still live. I mean, with some exceptions, these grass is very hardy form of life. And so let it go golden and let your landscape match the golden landscape of our state, because that's how we look in the summer. You say we have a wet season and a dry season. You could think of it as we have a green season and a gold season. And let your yard look like the rest of the state this summer. So I hope I've touched on the issues and try to, for the folks here who would be affected by these regulations, assure you that we're not doing this. We're not interested in a punitive approach. We're excited about the potential for this community to gather around this challenge and succeed and really nurture and protect this precious resource that's unique to the Russian River. And we want to be partners in that endeavor. And, oh yeah, I did mention I was going to talk about this exciting set of budget trailer bill issues. At least, you know, just a little bit, right? I know I've been taking a lot of your time. I apologize. The list of issues that are, and this is one of those situations where we're going to look back and say, did we take advantage of this crisis, right? You know, and in the big picture, Californians are becoming more water literate. You know, those of us in the room here, we can get all this, but the average citizen is now really talking about this, and it's healthy from our perspective as water, professionals and folks who are passionate about it and understand how important it is for sustainability of society. And so in that, looking through that lens, the trailer bill language that's being proposed is trying to address some gaps. For instance, the authority to implement these urban water conservation regulations at the local level. It's not altogether, you know, it's not uniform in terms of local entities' ability to enforce these regulations. So the drought expanded local authority language is being developed. There was also a kind of a related piece of legislation along those lines. And so the language is being worked through on that. There's also drought penalties that are being put into this legislation. There's drought monitoring reporting, and that's, I think, been approved at committee level with some modifications. What's interesting is it may seem kind of onerous to the agricultural or rural residential representatives to furnish information in a new way, and yet this is a statewide trend, so it's not unique to Russian River. That we're actually requiring a lot more reporting of diversions throughout the state. There is language about water system consolidation that's driven by drought, which exposes the vulnerability of small water systems to meet water quality, you know, drinking water standards and quantity needs, you know, in terms of running out of water. So there is language to compel smaller districts or private companies to be connected to adjacent systems, either physically or from a management standpoint. There are CEQA exemptions under consideration. There's a drought stormwater plan guidelines, which was a new law about, it was related to the watershed management plan concept I talked about. There's this AB 985 stormwater resource plan, some guidelines for exemptions to enable us to implement those sooner. And I think that's a good snapshot of some of the examples of pretty major changes that are being contemplated by the legislature and the governor's office. To just kind of get back to that original theme that the Aussies, you know, they say, crikey mate, you can't have any information. How can you make any decisions? And you know, I'll make light of it, but it actually is. If you want to point to one thing, the five water board members at the state board are convinced is that if we can get our information gathering improved in the next few years, we're going to really have set our state on a path of towards sustainability and resolving conflict, which is key in the water space. And with that, I'm happily entertain any questions.
Any board comments or questions? I just have one. I appreciate you clarifying the scope of the MOU on the EIR for Pacific Corps, the state of Oregon, California. For your background, there's rumors that it's far vaster document than that, and so I think it's very good to clarify it. Two, I did want to say that I think we get the best coordination of California with Oregon when Oregon participates, and so I think that was a very wise move as well. And then I hope that out of a dated situation of something that's ended, the restrictions, internal restrictions on staff get lifted as well. And,
okay, I'll bring that back.
Okay. Very quick, I just have two questions. What's the consolidated fee trailer bill about? I've gotten questions about it, and I don't know very much.
Well, you, fees.
Something with the State Water Resource Control Board had was.
It's ABA 25.
Okay.
This guy knows all about it.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, well, you feel free to. I don't know the details on that.
It's 825, and it allows the state board, as I understand it, to consolidate two water districts.
Yes.
In small rural communities. This is it's wildfire at the moment.
Yeah, oh, yeah, and that's a related it's related to what the trailer bill language is trying to accomplish.
Right.
And what this does relate to, you know, now that we have a Division of Drinking Water in the State Water Board.
Right.
There has been a flurry of ideas from the staff level that never reached the light of day in the Department of Public Health. And there were legislative concepts that came along last August. And so this is one of those issues. It's a very practical issue. I mean, I respect, you know, the local interests and achievements and management. But the drought has exposed some significant vulnerabilities. And, you know, in the end, we're as interested as anybody at the local level at the ratepayer getting the best value. So with that in mind, consolidation makes sense in a lot of places. And sometimes you don't have the local political will to accomplish it.
And then just one other comment. I've heard discussions, high policymakers, so they don't really exist, on the thought of banning ocean discharge because that's wasted water. And I just, as a Northern California, having been here, I don't think that would work very well here, contrary to the salmon stream. So I hope that it's shaped in such a way that regional differences can be properly accounted for and that you get in. And so we never quite hear it in the pure form that I did. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with those discussions. And actually, you've heard from probably the chair of San Diego region. He's interested in that as a policy for his region, or at least having the discussions. You know, from our standpoint, I'd say be careful about that type of rigid policy, a lot like what you've said. You know, even in Florida, where they've instituted that policy in part of their state, it's proven a lot easier said than done.
Right. Thank you. Any other comments? So then we're going to move on to, yes. I certainly will. Thank you for. This is on? Yeah, okay. Believe it or not, I had a mother who would come up in a public meeting and adjust the mic for me if I wasn't speaking properly. So I respond quickly rather than be embarrassed. So are we going to have awards at this point in time? Okay, so let's, before we get to public comment, we're going to give some awards to our staff.